Excellent.
I'm going to record. This is Monday, June 26th, 2023. And I have the pleasure for all of you here and all of you listening after to reintroduce, since she has been a spotlight speaker with us for a few times, Lisa Nabors. Lisa Nabors is a Sun Coach, a PCC, and if you haven't met her yet, she has a passion for language. She also has a passion for tomatoes, and since today we're talking about wishes and genies and fairy godmothers and gurus, you need to know that Lisa wanted to have fresh tomato sauce to make with her pasta. She is a culinary master. So she wished tomato plants, they grew, and this week she's going to fulfill that final dream. She's also she's quite committed to being direct, which I love because that's authentic and honest in communication. And her wish is to eliminate the words but, although, and however from conversation. But, although, and however. There'll be a test at the end. But, although, and however. So welcome, Lisa, very much. I'm eager to hear about three wishes from you.
Thank you. Well, good morning or afternoon to everyone. And it's a pleasure to see you. We'll try to keep the beach vibe going for you, Lourdes. So we can all, you know, enjoy that. And I'm going to invite you. You can select your perspective for our time together today. I'm going to invite you to think about a wish that you would like to have fulfilled for yourself, or if you prefer to put yourself in the space of a coach and one of your clients who may be working towards something at the current moment, I'm going to invite you equally to, you know, think about that, because, you know, so much of our work, I think, is linked, you know, to the relationships that we have, the clients that we have. And part of my wish for today, for our time together, is that by the end of our time together, and you'll tell me, you will walk away with one new idea, insight, tool, or technique that will support you in helping, you know, the wishes, yours and others, to come true. So that's my intention, to share some information with you, engage in some robust dialogue, and get to that place, which I'll test at the end. It's a test for me, really, not for you, but hopefully I will pass. So we'll see what happens. Good morning, Alfonso. Welcome.
Good morning. Please excuse me. I cannot turn my camera on. I will be listening very attentively. But I'm also cooking, so.
No worries. Oh, I should have had you consult with me. I don't know whether you heard or not when Terry was introducing me, but I'm trying for the first time in my life homemade pasta sauce with homegrown Roma tomatoes from my garden. So we'll see what happens.
I have heard about you so many times, and I'm sure you will teach us anything, including tomato stuff.
Fingers crossed. It'll be an adventure. That's a thing, right? You know, if it comes out fabulously and everybody loves it, it's a great adventure. And if you have a disaster, you make eggs. I mean, it works either way. It's the company, right? And the memories and the experience that we create. And that's one of the things that we're going to look at today. You know, the idea of wishing or dreaming, I think, is sometimes very ethereal and aspirational. And it has its roots in reality, because the fact of the matter is that in order to realize a dream or a wish, there's a lot of work that goes along with it. And when Terry and I were talking initially, you know, we had come up with this notion of, you know, genies or fairies and coaches. And so if it's possible, Mike, can we share the slides? I'd like to go to slide number two, because I have a question for everybody, if that's possible to do.
Absolutely.
Okay. Oh, thanks, Terry. I chose this notion of starting with a job description because most all of my work is with folks in business. And, you know, you certainly don't have to feel obligated to stay in that framework. And for our purposes today, I do have this question. I think there are certain similarities between what we do as coaches and what the genies, you know, of our fairy tales and, you know, cartoons and, you know, stories from our youth, you know, do with people. And so I'm curious to know from you, what do you think is one way that a coach is like a genie? And what do you think is a significant difference? Terry?
Well, you mentioned something that triggered my answer is a genie, as I think of it, has a genie lamp and there's smoke coming out of it and I would see the wish coming out of that. Mm-hmm. So we take that thing that's ethereal and we bring it all the way through a process into form through language eventually. As a coach.
Yeah, are you saying as a coach? Okay,
yeah.
Yes. I think that's quite true. Other folks?
So we're unlike a genie that way. Sorry. So I just finished my thought now. So we're unlike a genie because the genie will let the smoke go up, but the work has to be done by the coach once there's the smoke starting to go up.
Yes, in terms of setting the parameters or creating the space, and then ultimately the work, of course, done by the client.
Yeah.
But we have to create that arena in which the client can do the work and feel safe to do so, I would suggest.
Yeah. Michael?
Mike?
Well, I think thanks to Disney, we know that genies are funny. And I think all coaches should be funny. One of the things that coaches do, genies do that coaches do, from what I understand, is they listen really well because the genie is, you know, not going to grant you a wish unless you have a very specific one on the table. It's like, you know, I want to experience love. Well, can't do that. But, you know, you want someone to fall in love with you? Well, okay. And, you know, the main difference is, of course, that we can't snap our fingers, wiggle our nose, or whatever else, and make it magically happen. The client has to do that.
Yes. So a huge bifurcation there, I think, is who's doing the work? You know, I came across a quote when I was looking up and just doing some research, and it was, dreams don't work unless you do. So I thought that was interesting because in the classic Disney or, you know, fairy tale kind of a thing, you know, the hero or heroine shows up, they ask for something and then genie grants it. In our work, you know, people may ask for something and, you know, A, it's typically not in our power to grant, and B, it's certainly not in our job description. We can help the client to discover paths to what they have envisioned or to assess the pros and cons and so on. There are a lot of things we can do, which we're going to get into. But we are not the primary person doing. I think that's an important thing. You mentioned focus and trust and supporting the work. Sense of humor. I'm going to add that to the job description, Michael. And yeah, there are times I have thought that I really did need a good sense of humor, depending on, you know, the circumstance. And absolutely listening well. I think, you know, listening, of course, for what the client is saying. And then also equally important and concurrent is listening what the client is not saying. And obviously tone and pacing, word choice, you know, body language, all of that are sources of information for us as we support work to support the client, it feels to me. So this thing about wishes and dreams, if we could go to the next slide, please. I just want to, you know, make sure we're all on the same page, because the language is important, I think, when you are, you know, moving the client forward, helping them. And in this case, I did mix my fairy tales, if you may remember, wishes and dreams and clients. Oh my, who can cite that origin, if anyone?
Wizard of Oz?
Yes, Wizard of Oz. I should have known.
It's the way, it wasn't the right words, Lisa. It was the way you said it.
Okay.
It was the rhythm.
Yes. So we have to love that. And, you know, I think here just 2, 4, 6, 8, you know, thank you, Webster's Dictionary. But the idea here, I think, is equally aspirational and practical. There may be things the client tells you they desire or they wish for or they dream about. And, you know, best case, you know, you are supporting them in creating plans to identify a desired outcome, to clarify an objective, to quantify a goal. How will they know, you know, if, when they have reached the particular thing that they just told you they wanted? And whether they call it a dream or a wish, the intention is, you know, for them to be able to achieve what it is they have identified. That said, part of the work, it feels to me, and I'm interested in your perspective, part of the work is helping the client to see multiple futures and to consider tools that will help them in so doing. I think for me, when I have discovered circumstances where a client feels stuck, they only see one possibility, right? You ask a question, they give you an answer, and then they're done. And you're doing very fabulously, sitting there listening, waiting, and they're done. They gave you one answer. I think schools and society, we have, you know, encouraged people from the time they're kids to come up with the answer, as if there is only one right answer. And so when somebody comes up with the answer, they think they're done. And one of the best things I think that we do as coaches is to encourage people to consider multiple answers. And the idea that, you know, we're problem solving, where creativity is desired. We are not completing a puzzle where there's only one right answer. So helping people to embrace that is, I think, foundational. And then the second part, next slide, please, is coming to terms with the whole idea of change. I think that generally speaking, when our clients, you know, work with us, they're looking for more of something, less of something. and or something new. And you would think, well, you know, and I've had people say to me, well, Lisa, it's, you know, I said I wanted it and I was really excited and energized about it. And now not so much. Either it's a lot of work or it's not turning out the way I thought or whatever might be happening. And so in addition to falling in love with the idea of a change, I would suggest it's incumbent on us to encourage the client to name and embrace the emotions that may go with that change. Because in order to plan and execute and move forward, best case, you're prepared for the journey, right? I don't know if, well, so Lourdes is at the beach. I'm presuming, you know, you have towels or chairs and sunscreen, for me, snacks, just whatever that you might need at the beach. And so too, on a journey of change, people need certain things. Of course, for us, you know, we have ways to capture what the client is going to be working on in between our meetings, right? And then when we meet again and we talk about what they did, we are able to help them extract winning strategies. These are two things that help clients plan for the journey and start taking steps toward what they have identified for us, you know, they want to embrace as part of the new change. What are some of the tools, or just one, what is one tool that you have found particularly useful in your work with a client who is working to move forward and embrace a dream, a wish, a change of some sort? You can feel free to jump in or type something in chat and we'll capture it either way. Terry, what is that beautiful print?
I can't see myself, so I can't. Oh, there we are. What if?
The question, what if?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What if? Okay. Other thoughts? Hi, Romina. Ah, the magic wand. Okay.
I have another one. If you, sometimes I said, we don't know. So my question is, I have a question that sometimes I ask, if you would know, what was it? If you can imagine that you know, what was it?
That's a subset of what if. What if you don't know?
Vision? Vision of the future? Or vision of the change?
So would you, Lourdes, would you help them, like, to guide them to have that vision and articulate it with you?
Yes.
Okay, so Romina is having the person call in 3 years, and they're very happy and everything, and then to be able to describe what's going on. So
yes.
that future kind of a self. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? I don't know, I don't know if all of you are familiar with or not. Marshall Goldsmith has a tool, it's called Daily Questions. It's a little more granular than our approach in terms of writing out things that people are going to be, you know, working on and then in our next meeting to go over them and then extract the winning strategies. This is a tool that somebody can use every day. And here's what's interesting about it. The intention is to measure the effort by asking the question or starting the phrase, did I do my best today too, and then the client identifies a few things that they have told you they want to work on, something that they're willing to do every day. Of course, in my experience, mostly everybody's willing to do it when they're talking to you for the first time. When you check back in, sometimes the truth of life takes over. But this is an interesting tool because...
What is the name of the tool, Lisa? It's Marshall Rosen, that you said?
Marshall Goldsmith.
Goldsmith.
Mm. Daily questions.
Thank you.
Did I do my best today too? Like, let's say they told you they want to start exercising. They want to start meditating. They want to eat healthier. They want to use more questions. They want to be more patient. I don't know, you know, whatever. So did I do my best today too? And then on a scale of 1 to 10, they rate themselves. So maybe every afternoon they think about the day, or every morning they think about the day before. And they have a number of things that they've told you they want to work on. In my experience, no more than 5 is best, because otherwise it's like a, you know, Gone with the Wind novel. You know, they're never going to get through it. First couple of days, it's very mechanical in my experience. Next couple of days, it starts getting easier. By the time 2 weeks goes by, very interestingly, the items have become integrated into the person's thought process, at least in my experience. And I was very surprised when that happened to me. So it is, in my mind, a quick way to get people focused on something and a tool that they can use and adapt over time. I do highly recommend it. It gives an increased appreciation, you know, for what's going on and the work that's being done for the folks. Okay, next slide, please. So how many times, just, you know, show of hands, how many times have you been working with a client, they express a desire or a wish to you, they, you know, start moving toward it, and it becomes apparent very quickly, at least to you, that that wish is not theirs. The wish belongs to somebody else. In my world, since I'm working with organizations a lot, a boss, for example. For individual clients, it might be a family member, it might be someone else, I don't know. What have you found? And then I want to go back to Terry's question, because I think it also is pertinent to this. Why is it important, would you say? I know you all know this. Why is it important to perhaps verbalize and clarify if the wish is theirs or not?
See, to understand their motivation, maybe, no? To understand their motivation, what is the value that they are holding that it's important for them?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or their passion?
Yes, the motivation, the passion, the energy, the commitment, ultimately. Mm. And ultimately, what if they pursue the wish and they achieve it, and then still don't feel fulfilled because it wasn't their wish in the first place, right? Terry, how do we go back to the, I need to look at your point again that you were sharing.
Yeah, I was looking at the polarity side of it. We're talking about when you get it, and I was thinking, it would be definitely informative for me what might be the consequences if I don't move ahead towards this wish.
Yes.
I think that would give some level of clarity in choosing it.
Yes. Yes. And the extent to which I'm willing to do the work, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
You know, since I think all of us do some perhaps public speaking, some working with groups. Is that a fair assumption? I know Mike does and Terry does. Lourdes, do you?
Yes.
Ortal, you too?
Yes, I do.
I know Alfonso does. So I don't know if you ever heard this story. I'll tell it quickly because it's pertinent for this. John Maxwell is a consultant. He does a lot of work on teams and, you know, groups. And like so many other folks, he has done many large conferences, you know, the type ballroom, tables of 10, you know, they go for forever. And unlike a lot of other people, he is very good about sticking around on breaks so people can come up to him and ask him things and talk to him. He's very collegial and, you know, very gracious. So in this one event, it's break time and, you know, folks are coming up to him. This young guy, you know, comes up to John and says, you know, Mr. Maxwell, nice to meet you. I'm enjoying the session. And then he gets this kind of frown on his face and he says, you know, I want to do what you do. And John says, really? And he says, yeah, you know, it doesn't look that hard. And, you know, I'm looking around and there's X number of people and we've all paid X number of dollars and seems like a pretty good gig, you know, for you to be here and, you know, just doing what you do. And so I want to do what you do. And John, ever the gracious gentleman, looks at the man, the young guy, and says, that's great. He says, I have a question for you. I hear you saying you want to do what I do. I'm curious to know if you're willing to do what I have done. And I thought that was a very fabulous reply, because I think all of us could think of smart aleck kind of things that we might want to say to somebody like that, right? But John handled it very graciously. Still, the fact of the matter is that's a very valid question. What do you think? Ortel, good luck at the party. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Good to see you.
And you.
All I can think of, Lisa, you asked for an example, right?
I just thought, ask what do you think, you know, about it.
What do you think? Okay. In the training for the exploratory results for the program with a client, I made up this thing that really gets people's attention. The person is being sassy and saying, well, I want to win the lottery. And first I start lighthearted. Well, good. Will you give me a cut? Because the idea came here. And they said, no, seriously, are you willing to do what it takes? Buy the number of tickets in the right number of states, flying and traveling all around to get to those places before the time is up. Buying them all. Are you willing to do what it takes? And the person always says, well, no. And I say, well, mm-hmm. I'm not willing to work with a result where a client is not willing to do what it takes. And then we move on. And that's it. So it's the same thing.
Yes, very nice.
Yeah. And they don't try that out again.
Well, and of course, sometimes that can come out in the subsequent conversations, right? When you're reviewing the work that's been done and trying to extract winning strategies. And for me, when somebody has something on their list once, twice, you know, we get to the second or third review and there has been no movement, then I want to revisit their commitment to that particular objective that they have shared with me that they were willing to do work on, because now it's been weeks. So far, the aliens could have landed on their carport 5 times and the dog could have eaten the homework 10 times. And, you know, where are we? We're still in the same place. Why? This isn't something I assigned to you. This is something you said to me was important. So what meaning, you know, am I supposed to take from the fact that it's been X amount of time and we have moved nowhere? So it's a direct question, best case, you know, coming from a place of care, which I know you all do. And, you know, then maybe the person rethinks that. Maybe they don't want to work on that. Or maybe they just needed to work out some little detail or something. Who knows? It could be a lot of different things. Michael?
Yeah, what came to mind as you were saying that was, isn't that what a genie's wish is all about? That it just magically happens, you know, and they're not willing, the person doesn't need to do any work to get that result.
Correct.
And so that opens up a coaching opportunity to explore why you want that result and what's behind it, who's important, who owns it, you know, all these type of things, and making it a more powerful result than if it just suddenly appeared.
Yes. And as you all pointed out earlier, you know, if the genie gives me the, you know, what I wished for, it's kind of handed to me, versus if I aspire to something, if I want something to come true and I plan for it and I work for it, then that's about me. And I, you know, can claim, you know, the full ownership of that, because it wasn't just handed over to me. It was something that I identified and I worked toward and I, you know, put the energy in order to have that achievement. Even so, there is going to be emotion, perhaps many emotions that are associated with the change. And that's when I ask you the question, what is the ripple effect? You know, if all of us have seen movies, I think probably all of us have been to the theater, we all know that there's a script. The characters follow the script. They read and deliver the lines that have been written for them, you know, by the author, you know, of the play, movie, etc. Well, what happens when an actor, a character, does not deliver the lines that he or she is expected to deliver? What happens?
Everyone else gets confused.
Everyone else gets confused. Terry gave a cut.
You know, we'll say improvise.
Yes, okay, now we're in improv. We're not in a regular play. Yeah. And you know, some actors and some folks are very good at improv and some are not. In either case, I think Michael's point is well taken, that when the characters do not deliver the lines as expected, people get confused. And I would suggest to you that that is like real life. If you have friends who know you well, if you have coworkers who know you well, if you have folks who interact with you on a regular basis, family, they know that when, you know, Uncle Tom says, well, let me tell you a story about how that happened, you're good for 20 minutes because right? You're going to get this whole story. Or if, you know, Aunt Sarah says, I'm worried about you. What she really means is whatever that our history tells us she really means. So if you have a client who is interested in and has expressed a desire to move forward in a particular direction, best case, you can help them think through not only the logistical, I would say, elements of the change, but and the emotion that could be associated with the change, if I get it, if I don't. And also what I call this ripple effect, which is for the people around you, how are they going to react when everybody looks at you for the answer and you say, you know, you all are the folks who know this subject, whatever the subject is, the best. What do you think? And you don't give the answer. What's going to happen? Okay, next slide. So I think that there are a couple of different concurrent themes that we're working with. One, what does the client tell us they want to do? Two, you know, what does the change look like if it happens, if it doesn't happen? Three, this ripple effect of, you know, how it's going to impact the people in the client's orbit, if you will. And the I would suggest the context within which the client is doing the work is also important, So what questions do you use, or what questions might you recommend that would support this exploration of the potential impact of the change on the client's world, if you will?
Can you repeat the questions, please, Nisa?
Yes, all right. So if you're working with this client, they tell you they want to make this change, and you are aware that they have, let's say, I'm going to use a work example, that's what I do most. Let's say they have a team and they have been very directive with the team. Nobody does anything without permission from this boss. Everybody asks the boss before they do things. And now the boss is deciding that they want the folks to be more independent. And so they have agreed with me, the coach, that they are not, for the next 2 weeks, they are not going to give direction to the team. Team's very experienced. They don't need it. This is habit that's happened, that they come to the boss all the time and ask. Instead of giving a direction, the boss has agreed that they are going to ask 3 questions of anybody who knocks on their door for this period of time. That's what I'm asking you. What questions or what approach have you found to be helpful with your clients if you're trying to get them to be more tuned in to the context as they make this change in behavior? Terry?
Well, I had a very different example in mind, if I may. It's not in the work world. And it helps me understand what you mean by context, so tell me if I'm on the right path. So we are in Alaska now. It's very cold, and I really want an outdoor swimming pool, but I'm not going to pay the money for heat. So that's my wish. I want an outdoor swimming pool. Well, context is, what are my neighbors going to think? What will the government think? What will the polar bears think? What's the impact on all the layers of people? What will my family think? You know, where is the nearest psychiatric ward? So all the layers of things that surround me is what I think of as context. Is that what you're looking for?
Yes. Okay. And depending on your client, everybody's context is going to be a bit different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have at your disposal your knowledge of the client. If it's an organization, you know, and your knowledge of the organization. If it's a client that you've worked with for a while, they have given you information, you know, that describes their work environment, perhaps their the things that support this change in behavior, what they're aspiring toward. You know, you can consider in all the information that they've given you in the past and, you know, ask questions that help them to focus on not just, you know, what their pursuit of the goal is identified, but the pursuit of the goal is identified within the context of their real world, because factors are going to support or get in the way of that journey. And best case, you can help them to identify and leverage the supports and think about to avoid or mitigate the barriers. Mm-hmm. And that requires really our full presence, you know, with the client, which of course I know as Sun coaches, all of you are very fabulous about doing. So that would be my observation there in terms of context. Terry or Michael, is there anything that, you know, we should bring up in terms of the revised competencies and how context is integrated these days in a more powerful way? Okay, I'll take that as a no.
No, I have a yes. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for my to go first. Well, in context.
Well, especially, you know, the new competency number 2 embodies the coaching mindset. It is interesting that the competency defines my coaching better than the ICF definition of coaching. And effectively what we're, you know, talking about here again, we've danced around, and this wish concept is, you know, the client has to own it and the coach has to facilitate it. Mm-hmm. That's the job of each. And, you know, it works best, and sometimes it doesn't work at all. And coming to competency number one, which is, you know, the one that I dance on the most with ethics, we see a lot of violations of the code of ethics when during the coaching conversation, the coach does not let the client own it, takes control and directs. We often contribute that to be, you know, less than desirable, you know, non-directive coaching, but it also leads to complaints where people come to the ICF and say, you know, I was mistreated, I was maltreated during the coaching conversation. It doesn't show up as I was poorly coached, because the client doesn't understand that. They said they didn't respect me, they disregarded me, they didn't, you know, acknowledge my culture, my background, my context, these type of things.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Thank you, Michael. Terry?
Well, if I can go back to my polar bear example, a lot of the context now in ICF is valuing diversity, DEIJB. So I've decided in my plot here that I had all the polar bears imagined in white, and I need to ask one of the black bears or brown bears from the States, the mainland, to come up and help me with this project so that I can get different points of view from their context, coming from different generational backgrounds and legacies. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking of that in terms of the competencies and also ethics, diversity. Mm-hmm. So it's not always yes. our own context. It's the context that we have adopted from larger circles. Mm-hmm. Which becomes our context.
Yes. So I think, you know, this particular concept is probably very well known to everybody on the call. I'm just going to mention it because, you know, since you've brought up, Terry, the idea of, you know, DEI and intentional inclusion and, you know, all of this. Ubuntu is a concept that I discovered several years ago. Maybe you all have been aware of it for many more years than me. I don't know. But I highly recommend that you familiarize yourself with it. It's very powerful and very inclusive, you know, at its heart. And, you know, the story about it, you know, just to take a minute, if you were seeking to describe it to somebody, it's a sub-Saharan African concept. And the idea is that if two people were walking down the road and came upon each other, the first person will say to the other, "I see you." And the second, thank you, Alfonso, the second person then and only then will say, "I am here." I get goosebumps every time I say that out loud because it is such a powerful affirmation of who we are as human beings and the way in which we can recognize and acknowledge each other, you know, by that simple but not easy act. Anyway, all right, I digress. Next slide, please, if I may. I want to, you know, make sure that you are comfortable in cataloging for yourself what are the ways that you have to help make your clients' wishes come true. As Michael was just pointing out, this is not about you doing. This is about you supporting or enabling or facilitating, creating a safe space within which the client can do the work. We talked about winning strategies. I shared with you the idea of Marshall Goldsmith's daily questions. I'm curious, do you have a favorite, you know, kind of go-to tool that you have found to be quite powerful that you would like to share with us at the moment? Favorite question, perhaps?
Yeah, I put in the chat, similarly to another question, what will that get you? And I love, and I tell the client, I'm going to ask you the same question until we're done. And what will that get you? 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 And just keep going until they stop. And usually when they, you know, repeat the same theme around three times, I know that they've landed on where they really need to be, instead of thought they want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's my favorite, one of my favorite tools.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great one. I am not a big supporter of excuses or reasons why I can't do X. And so one of my favorite questions after somebody, they told you what they wanted to do. Now they're giving you all the reasons why. Oh, I can't do that because of this, and I can't do that, you know, and they're kind of talking themselves out of it. And so I have found a question that works quite well is, what is the consequence of doing nothing? Sometimes I say, what is the consequence of choosing to do nothing? To reinforce the idea that they are still making a choice. And sometimes that, you know, will bring the person kind of around to thinking, oh, well, yes, I am choosing to do nothing because of all these environmental things that I just listed for you. And in the end, it's still my choice. So I have gotten a lot of good results with that question, if it helps.
Just want to mention we have so, 5 minutes left.
Sorry, go ahead, Yes, absolutely. And if we could go to the next slide, please. I was looking forward to sharing this one, and then I'll take questions and
very good.
Seeing, all right, well, actually, I'm going to hold on to this slide and ask you what one thing maybe you took away from our time together and how you might use this. Mm-hmm. But I would like to go to the last slide first, because this is a concept I wanted to share with you. I'm a Carl Jung fan. I did not realize that he said this when I was Googling quotes about dreams and wishes and so on. I found this and I just thought it was quite a good nod to our profession. And Jung said, in describing folks, people who look outside dream. People who look inside awake. And it's my challenge and wish for you that all of us, let's awaken people in what we do. So if we could just go back one slide, and I know we have 5 minutes left. I'm curious to know if you're willing to share what's one thing that you might be taking away from our time together today, and anything else that you would like to comment on. If you feel most comfortable putting something in chat, that's fine. Mm-hmm. And wishes have roots in reality.
Yes. I never thought of that before. The genie is reality. And the genie puts the smoke up, which is not real.
Mm-hmm.
The fairy godmother is real. But her wand does things that bring in the not real, the wishes.
Mm-hmm.
A guru is real.
Yes.
I mean, it's like there's always a connection to reality. I had never thought of that before.
I see Alfonso shared, I learned new ways to ask my genius.
Yeah, that was really good.
The one thing, did I do my best today to... by the way, I'm pretty certain if you Google it, you can access Marshall's tool. If not, I'm happy to provide it, so just let me know. Other thoughts for anybody?
I like the, who says that wish? a question about who, I don't know how to say it in English.
Whose wish is it? Yeah.
Yes, whose wish is it? Yes. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes we give it for granted and don't help our clients reflect on that. And also the ripple effect, I mean, reflecting on the consequences of achieving that dream.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you, Lourdes. Appreciate that.
And yesterday,
I don't know if it's been said already, but because I missed the 10 minutes at the beginning, and I was reflecting on the gene. I don't remember what was the first question, but I was wondering if it's like the space we allow for the client and like the spirit. Mm-hmm. It's not us, but it's the spirit that creates the magic. So that was, I was wondering.
Yes, I think that that's a very important element of what we as coaches bring, you know, to the conversation and creating that space to enable the kind of thinking and ultimately action that leads to, you know, successful pursuit of goals that are identified, wishes, dreams we've been talking about. That's the gift that we bring, you know, to enable the client to do the work. So thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you. So many insights. I'm still processing.
So all of you are very welcome. It was a pleasure to see everybody. If there's anything I can, you know, do or support you in any way, please don't hesitate to reach out. Terry?
Well, thank you very, very much, Lisa. This was wonderful. And as I discovered yesterday when we were talking, I said something like, there's a genie in every one of us. And then I put the middle part away and I went, genie, us, which reinforces the awakening. Clients have their own answers. The genie is in us. Oh, my goodness. So thank you for sharing your wisdom, and I will never use those three words again. Does anyone remember what they are?
Now, see, everybody has committed not to use them. So.
Although,
and however. Was it however?
However.
Thank you very much. Those of you who want the recording, I will send it forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.